and more times than I can count, I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We have a lot to share. Always about empowering people, allowing us to have more information from which to make informed choices. Today, for example, for the tens of millions of Americans that who suffer from high blood pressure, seven herbs and foods that Paula Fassa has put together that can lower your blood pressure and save your life. Also, rarely do people today drink chamomile tea. At one time in the 1970s, it was the number one tea in the health market. Today it's green tea, oolong tea. I think we should go back to chamomile. I'll give you all the reasons why. It's just an absolutely amazing herbal tea. Also, drink more water, lose more weight, have less pain. I'll give you the insight on that. And then we'll look at statin use. It's very common. People use statins the rest of their lives. Well, did your doctor tell you it will increase your risk of breast cancer by over 200%? It will. And yet it's never been shown to prevent a fatal heart attack. It's never been shown to prolong your lives. Then why in the world are millions of Americans using it? If you have some liver problems, and a lot of people do, cirrhosis of the liver, hepatitis of the liver, toxic liver, there's something you can do. Beyond liver support, milk thistle also shows promise as a cancer therapy. So we're going to talk about your liver and cancer. And a father's love is one of the greatest powers to impact the child's development. We've known about the mother's power. And finally, hemp repairs your DNA. How so? We'll share that and more. Then I'm going to hit a lot of social issues today because the audience that we have, which has evolved over the decades, continues to say that here's what I would like to hear and read. For example, we're going to look at fracking and how they're offering $50,000 per household as hush money. In other words, we're going to give you $50,000. You sign this release so you can't sue us. You can't go to the public. You can't go anywhere with this information. If you should end up getting sickened or your property is worthless, the water is contaminated forever, and people are taking it. Also, how is it that Henry Kissinger, considered an American diplomatic hero, an icon, when it can now be proven, it's not speculation, it's not hearsay, that he greenlighted the Argentinian Dirty War that led to 30,000 deaths, he should be arrested and tried for crimes against humanity. Following the fact that America is now a full-fledged fascist state where the police are out of control, we see it every day. We saw it just yesterday. The professor walking across the campus and walking across the street on the campus, University of Arizona, there was construction. So instead of walking at the light, she walked in the middle like dozens of other students and faculty were at the same time. Yet she was singled out to be stopped and arrested and now charged with all kinds of crimes. Because, why? Because she's black? I'll give you that story. And yet, since when do the security on a campus stop and arrest someone? But they're doing this all the time. I reported 2 weeks ago how a 96-year-old man in frail condition was living in an assisted living center, and he had some pain problems. The people thought that he should be taken to the emergency room and checked out. He didn't want to go. And so they called 911. So a group of five or six officers showed up, and they told him to go to the hospital, and he said he didn't want to go. He'd be all right. So they went out in the hallway, and they decided, okay, he didn't want to pay attention to us. They went in, and a close range with a 12-gauge shotgun just pumped him right in the chest, killed him. Boom, boom, boom. Then while he was dying, 96-year-old frail man, and of course this has to be Chicago, right? Only Chicago do you have this kind of punk attitude. These fully bulletproofed, you know, supermen cops then physically restrain him and make sure that he's handcuffed while he's bleeding to death, 96-year-old man, that they shot at close range with a 12-gauge shotgun. Will anything happen to them? Absolutely not. Because their union will come to protect them. That's always the case. The mayor will protect him, Ron Emanuel, and we know what kind of man he is. He was the, you know, remember him and Obama? He was the chief of staff, and it's his brother that created Obamacare, one of the architects of it. And this is considered just normal behavior. Everywhere you look in America, and I mean everywhere you look, you're finding the police are just absolutely out of control and doing whatever they want at any point they want with whomever they want and getting away with it. And what do? Nothing. Why? So I'm not blaming the police now. I know what kind of sociopaths are running amok in their ranks. I'm asking, and this is the question I'm posing to you, why is it that America refuses to become proactive on any single issue that's relevant to the survival of our quality of life, our constitutional rights, our environmental rights, our human rights in this country today? I don't see it. Now, if you see it, challenge me on it. As you know, I love to debate, and I'm always open for challenge. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And while you're at me, challenge me. Where are the demonstrations against home foreclosures with over 41 million Americans now out of their homes? Where's the demonstrations and the protests against 18 million hungry children? Where's the protests against Citizens United in buying our Constitution and eviscerating the Fourth, the Fifth, and the First Amendment in how it is interpreted and used? Why aren't we protesting becoming a police state? Why are we not protesting how we are drugging our children? Why are we not protesting how senior citizens are treated in nursing homes where they're put on antipsychotic medications, thousands die each year, and yet every study shows they're not psychotic? Where are the protests? Why aren't we protesting? What's happened to us? 888-874-4888. I'll come back to your calls on our talkback segment later. My guest in the second part of our program today is not afraid to speak out, not afraid to tell the truth. He is Anuradha Mittal. He is the founder and executive director of the Oakland Institute, a think tank promoting policies and social justice in the environment. And he's going to talk about the false belief that corporate land grabs will increase the world's food supply and the role of the U.S. government in land and water acquisition in developing countries. Why should this be important to you? Because without you being aware of it, in Africa, in South America, in Indonesia, huge amounts of land are being purchased by syndicates, hedge funds, equity partnerships, and then they say, and all with the aid and support of the United States government and other governments as well, to help our food supply. No, they're absolutely pathologically lying. They can't prove that at all. To the opposite is true. We'll go into that. Also, America's paramilitary police, Andrea Damon, will talk about why we have a paramilitary police. And when does ordinary life become a mental illness? From Vince Ward, the state. Well, when psychiatry and Big Pharma says so. So in other words, if they say your normal behavior is suddenly psychotic, then it's psychotic and you have to be restrained, treated. You know where this is going, don't you? Or you should. It's so easy to see. They want to get it to where every single American, but they can't start that way. They'll start with children who have no choice. And they know how compliant, how obedient, how subservient, how docile the average parent is. So easy to manipulate, because they do it every day. we want to make sure that your child does not have any mental illness, so we're going to give them a teen screen. We're going to screen them for the child's benefit and the safety of the other students. Okay. We found that your child has kind of borderline mania, and we think it's best that you keep them on preventatively and proactively medication. Okay. And it's all for the best. If you don't believe me, ask Hillary Clinton. Okay. Where do you think it's going to go? Well, I'm telling you where it's going to go. It's going to go to where they want every American to be medicated. Will it happen? Well, some of us won't allow ourselves to be medicated. But for the average person, they're already medicated. So what's the difference if their kids get medicated? I'll give you the insight on that. Facebook used Americans in a mind control experiment. Here's what you didn't know until right now. The experiment was actually funded through Research Department of Defense. Why? Quote, to quell civil unrest. Okay, we'll share that. Let's go to the information. We have a lot to share today. We have a lot of people who have high blood pressure. First and foremost, it's the diet. Then it's a lack of exercise. Then it's stress. All of those, singularly or in combination, can cause high blood pressure. There's two measurements that you want to be aware of. One is called systolic, S-Y-S-T-O-L-I-C. It's the first number of a blood pressure reading, and it's generally the higher number. And it measures pressure as the heart pumps. If you have above 140, it's considered high blood pressure. The diastolic is the second. It's the lower number. And it measures blood pressure during the heart's resting points. Over 90 is considered high. So what can we do if we have high blood pressure? Well, there's several things we can do. First and foremost, we can get rid of the salt in the diet. Some Americans are eating 5, 6, 7, 8,000 grams of salt a day. That's an awful lot of salt, sodium. We really only need about 800 to 1,200 milligrams. And you can easily get that from your diet. But much of the processed foods we consume has a lot of sodium in it. That's the first thing. Secondly, we can drink a lot more water. Because water does something wonderful. It thins the blood naturally, rehydrates the cells, allows toxins to be taken out of the kidneys and the liver, and maintains osmotic pressure, meaning the pressure outside the cell and the pressure in the cell. That's also good. Then you can also use some supplements. Now, here are the supplements, and here are the juices that can lower blood pressure naturally. Juices, the best juice for lowering blood pressure would be celery, green apple, cabbage, and lemon combined. The dominant would be celery. Next would be green apple, smaller amount of cabbage, and then maybe the juice of one whole lemon, including the skin. That's terrific. Then you could also use coenzyme Q10. Now, coenzyme Q10 is quite simply one of the most important nutrients for creating energy in the body. And unfortunately, people taking statin drugs deplete themselves of Q10. You need it. It can help prevent a heart attack. It can help prevent a stroke. It can help your brain continue to have vital functioning for a long period of time. But it can also lower blood pressure. L-arginine, it's a very important amino acid, but what it does, it's a cofactor for creating nitric oxide. And we know that the more exercise you do, the more nitric oxide you need. It's a gas molecule that keeps blood vessel walls flexible, enhances blood pressure lowering, and better circulation. I believe we should be taking vitamin C in buffered form about 8 times a day. And that keeps the blood thin, which helps prevent strokes, but it also lowers blood pressure. the best single herb for the heart, without question. This is the Rolls Royce of herbal heart remedies, hawthorn berry. It is phenomenal. It is the ultimate tonic. And you can use it as a tincture, as a tea, or as a powder. There's no side effects whatsoever. It's great. Ginger is also good. It thins the blood, and that helps prevent stroke, and it can lower cholesterol and blood pressure. And then if you're into fermented foods, there's one that really does a phenomenal job. It's called natto, N-A-T-T-O. It's a fermented soy paste. Now, generally, I suggest that people add something to it because I don't like the taste of it. I don't think most people like the taste of it. But it really is good because it can help with lowering your blood pressure. It also is a good source of vitamin K2. And, of course, the more meditation, yoga, mindful relaxation that you engage in, the lower your blood pressure. Those simple things can save lives. I mentioned at the beginning of the program chamomile tea. I think chamomile is quite simply the top tea that we could consume. It has different qualities than green tea, but there's no reason not to use both. In fact, since green tea almost has no taste, chamomile has a nice taste. You could combine the two together. Put a tea bag of each in. Why? Because chamomile has been used since Roman civilization, Egyptian civilization, Greek civilization. It's rich in flavonoids. It's rich in chrysin, which is good for men, and testosterone. It helps treat cuts and wounds. In fact, throughout history, they would make a salve for the wounds to expedite healing. You could do the same thing. You could put the tea bags, after they've steeped, or tea from those, into a poultice, add in manuka honey, colloidal silver, and use that over cuts, burns, poison ivies. Has very strong antimicrobial, antioxidant, anti-inflammatory properties. It helps with diabetes, and it helps with hyperglycemia. It helps to prevent colds, especially those in the sinuses, the throat. It calms muscle spasms. So if you're having a strong exercise, have yourself some chamomile tea afterwards. In fact, you can make a cold chamomile tea, make it as like an iced tea. It soothes an aching stomach. Really good for people who have problems with the lining of the intestine, the itises, irritable bowel syndrome. It allows you a good night's sleep, and it fights cancer. Yeah. So those are some of the things that chamomile does. So it's really a must. Now, I mentioned a few moments ago that we should be consuming more healthy water, clean water. Don't assume the water coming out of your tap is clean. If you only saw the research that I have on how contaminated most people's water actually is, you could have parasites, Giardia lamblia, histolytic artemisia. You couldn't see them. They're there. And they can cause you a lot of grief when they get in your system. There's nanoparticulates of medicine in our water supply because water filtration cannot filter it out unless you get specialized water filters, which can. But the key is drink more clean water. And you can even lose weight because you're hydrating and you're flushing. And that's important. In fact, if we drank more water, we wouldn't be as thirsty. You can also have what is called water-induced thermogenesis. That means drinking water itself increases energy expenditure of your body. So this time of year, most people are not drinking enough. The Institute of Medicine recommends 91 ounces of water for women, 125 ounces for men. That's about 2.7 to 3.7 liters each day. But the reality is most people are an average. You get an athlete doing a good hot workout. I started my training on Sunday for the World Games, which is over a year and a month away. And you go out and you do a 12-mile run in the heat, you're going to have what is called profuse perspiration. You'd have to drink a gallon just to make up for the water that you lost. But the water doesn't all stay in the body, so you drink a small amount throughout a whole day, not all at once. Because you drink it all at once, the body has a mechanism to protect itself from what is called polydipsia or hydrodipsia, and it flushes it out. But that doesn't mean that you regained the electrolytes you lost nor the hydration you lost, so you space it, like 12 ounces, then 12 ounces, then 12 ounces. Always put some lemon in the water. Cold water with lemon is phenomenal. It's a thirst quencher. And it can also help alleviate pain, especially in the muscles, because it flushes lactic acid out. Really good for gout. Statin use for 10 years. Well, I know people have been on statins for longer than 10 years. And when I ask them, what tests have your doctor taken to see that this is actually helping you and what other options are there? Well, I didn't ask. Why not? Well, I thought that there was something I'd know about it. No. Here's what you should know. That according to a Dr. Brownstein from Natural Society, you're increasing your risk of breast cancer by over 200%. And that is really stupid. Lipitor, Zocor, Mevacor, Crestor, Prevacol, they've been around for a long time, over 25 years, and they're the most profitable drugs ever sold by the pharmaceutical cartels. They've got millions upon millions of Americans thinking that they take these, they'll prevent a heart attack. The trouble is, they don't. Let's just take a look at women. About 25% of U.S. women over the age of 45 currently take a statin medication, even though statins in women have never been shown to prevent a heart attack, never been shown to prolong lives. For women and the elderly, there is no indication ever to take a statin medication. So if your doctor is so misinformed, so intellectually lazy, so disconnected from wanting to do the best that they can for you, find another doctor. Find a holistic doctor. Find someone who cares. So, a study released just yesterday reported that in women, current users of statins for 10 years or longer had an 83% risk of invasive ductal carcinoma and a 97% increased risk of invasive lobular carcinoma of the breast as compared to never users. That was 2013. Among women with high cholesterol levels, current users of statins for 10 years had a 204% increase in invasive ductal carcinoma and a 243% increased risk of invasive lobular carcinoma as compared to never users. So, know the truth and save your life. And finally, we all know that milk thistle is one of nature's most important herbs for helping the liver. And also, if we've taken something, it's a poison that impacts the liver. And it's true, but there's more. According to Paul Fassa, the Natural Society, quote, it has been helpful for hepatitis B and C, fatty liver, cirrhosis of the liver. Going even further, milk thistle has been shown to be an effective cancer therapy. A recent study found in the University of Colorado Skaggs School of Pharmacy journal report has produced evidence of milk thistle halting the spread and reversing lung cancer. Recent study demonstrates milk thistle's ability to curb lung cancer. End quote. So, that's really terrific. So now we know that we should be considering milk thistle. The study was published in the peer-reviewed journal Molecular Carcinogenesis. And just on a very human note, we all know the power of a mother's unconditional love for her baby and developing fetus and child, toddler, all the stages of life. But we forget the father's love. We shouldn't. Because according to PreventDisease.com, a father's love contributes as much and sometimes more to a child's development as does a mother's love. That is one of the many findings in a new large-scale analysis of research about the power of parental rejection and acceptance in shaping our personalities as children and into adulthood. A previous study by research at the University of Arizona showed just how important dad's job as a role model actually is. The study showed that girls who receive lower quality fathering tend to engage in more risky sexual behavior in adolescence. Quote, in our half century of international research, 50 years, we have not found any other class of experience that has a strong and consistent effect on personality and personality development, as does the experience of rejection, especially by parents in childhood, said Professor Ronald Rohner, University of Connecticut, co-author of the study, in Personality and Social Psychology. Quote, children and adults everywhere, regardless of differences in race, culture, and gender, tend to respond in exactly the same way when they perceive themselves to be rejected by their caregivers and other attachment figures. Now, they look carefully at 36 different studies from around the world that together involve over 10,000 participants, and they found that if you have your child, and if you feel anxious and insecure, if you feel that there's hostility or aggression towards you by, let's say, your father, the pain of rejection, especially when it occurs over a period of time, tends to linger into adulthood, making it more difficult for adults who are rejected as children to form secure and trusting relationships with their intimate partners. So that's just one more way that we can understand how so many people today are so insecure, they don't trust. And I've said this before, but I'll highlight it again. What happens when people have an ability to grow and embrace and to love, but they reject it? They don't come out and say they're rejecting it, but you can clearly sense and feel that they're not accepting it. It's because at some point in their life, more often than not, they have felt betrayed, they do not trust, and hence they're coming from a maladaptive sense of self. And more often than not, they will act it out, always sabotaging whatever good that they've created. And that's the latest on health and healing. Still have some things to talk about before we go to our break. This is one that's important, and that is, this is from Tyler Durbin from Head Zero. Quote, starting today, interest rates on new student loans rise by 20%. Quote, and gives the new interest rate loans will be 7.21% if it's parents and graduates. It'll go up to 6.21% for graduates and professionals and 4.66% for undergraduates. Here's my concern. I do not believe that the United States government should be in the business of being a bank that holds the student in a debt peonage. And here's why. And it's just common sense and reason, something we seem to be lacking at every level in our society. If the government says that the corrupt, vile, evil banks, and that's all they are, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, but we're going to bail you out, no matter how corrupt you've been, no matter what bad debt bets you've made, we're going to take all your bad assets and we're going to take them from you. You give them all to us, $70 billion a month for years. We'll call it quantitative easing. Second time around, first time around, we'll call it low interest loans. Low interest? No, no interest. 0.1, 0.2%, that's zero interest. Your collateral will be garbage debt that's worth nothing. So we're going to give you $21 trillion, true story, trillion dollars to these organizations. And then you can go out and charge whatever you want. So let's just say that right now a hot investment is the speculating in the growth economies. For several years it was China, India, Brazil, South Korea. You could get 8% immediate return that year. Well, if money costs you zero and you're getting 8%, you've just made 800% profit. And also, you don't even have to give us money. We're not even going to put it in your bank account. We'll just credit you with it, and we'll give you interest on it, interest against the national debt. Oh, that's nice. Does it mean I don't have to actually invest anything? Nothing. You're going to give me money? I'm going to give it to you. But you're not going to put it in my bank account? No, we're going to hold it in the Federal Reserve. I see, but I'm going to make interest on money that I didn't give you anything for, and I'm not giving to the American government, I'm not giving to the American taxpayer, we can do what I... Yes, it's the best scam in history. How come no one's figured this out? Well, because the ones who are smart enough to figure it out, generally the ones who created the problem, and the others who could figure it out and have, they're not given a forum to challenge it. So the people who know the truth are not given a forum to show the truth, and the people who know what the lie is, they're given all the power. I see. So why is it we couldn't just forgive all interest on all student debt, all interest on payday loans, all interest on... We could. And just charge the same interest we charge to, let's say, a bank. We could do that, but we don't consider the student as important as the bank. Students don't give political contributions. Banks do. You see, Bill Clinton has made $110 million since leaving office on lectures, mainly. And how does he do that? Well, it's simple. One of his lectures, he made $1.3 million. Yeah, $1.3. Who gives someone $1,300,000? We did 542 lectures, and the average is $225,000 for a short talk. Nothing is actually revealed. Actually, Bill's average was $193,609 per speech. And last year alone, he pulled in $16.3 million for speaking. Who's got that kind of money? Well, people that he made deals with, people that he opened doors with. When he deregulated Wall Street, the whole deregulation of the financial market meant that they were making hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars. So this is the way that Wall Street and major industries say thank you. They've done it to Larry Summers. Everyone who's powerful, who makes a deal that helps big business, they don't put it in a computer. They don't talk about it over the phone. There's plausible deniability. They just say, come and give a lecture to a group of us, and we'll give you $1 million. What do we want me to talk about? Doesn't matter. You could read a phone book. This is our way of saying thank you. It's easy for us to give you $1 million if you've given us $1 billion. That's how the entire political apparatus in Washington works. From the Washington Post, quote, detailed $104,900,000 that former President Bill Clinton has made from speaking fees since leaving office. The report comes a few days after Hillary Clinton was lambasted by students at University of Nevada for charging $225,000 speaking fee, and the week later told The Guardian she was unlike the truly well-off. Of course she's not well-off. Anyone who knows anything about economics knows the Clintons are not like other well-off. They only have, or I should say, he has, just him, 104. She's probably made probably in the neighborhood of 30 million. So they only have 130 million. That doesn't get you at the table when there's, you know, 1,500 billionaires and another million people who have over $100 million. But still, not bad to have $125 million. Now, let's put this in perspective. Bill Clinton has made more money than all of the former presidents of the United States combined. And no one ever asks, who's giving him this money? Wonder who? Wonder why? So the next time you hear how they're doing something to help us, like taking away the pesky Glass-Steagall Act and regulations on gas hydrofracking and watering down the Clean Air Act and taking the teeth out of the Environmental Protection Agency and getting rid of those pesky rules about having children have more selections of fruits and vegetables. How dare those kids want more fruits and vegetables? Who says they need more fruits and vegetables? Dietitians? What do they know? Right? No. The people who are the sponsors, Pepsi-Cola, Coca-Cola, McDonald's, they say, I see. And they give us healthy foods, right? Our bodies are healthy. Our kids' teeth are better if we just have more of their foods. We think so. Because where is the official challenge to any of it? This is what I was saying earlier. Where is there any challenge? We challenge everything. So we're challenging it. We're also challenging the idea that they can do fracking and create massive havoc to the environment, increase the likelihood of earthquakes. We can see that in Arizona and Wyoming and Arkansas. Quote from ProPublica, fracking firms offer locals $50,000 hush money. Quote, for the last 8 years, Pennsylvania's been riding the natural gas boom, with companies drilling and fracking thousands of wells across the state. In a little corner of Washington County, some 20 miles outside of Pittsburgh, EQT Corporation has been busy drilling close to a dozen new wells on one site. It didn't take long for the residents of the town who lived near the fracking operations to complain about the noise, the air quality, and what they regard as threats to their health and quality of life. Initially, EQT, one of the largest producers of natural gas in Pennsylvania, tried to allay concerns with promises of noise studies and offers of vouchers so residents could stay in hotels to avoid noise and fumes. But then, in what experts say was a rare tactic, the company got more aggressive. It offered all the households along the Cordox Road $50,000 in cash if they would agree to release the company from any legal liability for current operations as well as those to be carried out in the future. It covered potential health problems and property damage and gave the company blanket protection from any kind of claim over noise, dust, light, smoke, odors, fumes, soot, air pollutants, and vibrations. The agreement also defined the company's operations as not only including drilling activity, but the construction of pipelines, power lines, roads, tanks, ponds, pits, compressor stations, houses, and buildings. Quote, the release is so incredibly broad and such a laundry list, said Doug Clark, a gas lease attorney who represents landowners. You're releasing for everything, including activity that hasn't even occurred yet. It's crazy. Well, it's crazy, yes, but it's very smart of the fracking company. You simply exploit people's economic conditions or greed, either one. And then when they get sick or their property is worthless, they can't sue you. So you've made a lot more than $50,000 and you've shut up your neighbors. That's what's going on. I wanted to tell you about that. And also, when does ordinary life become mental illness? From Vince Ward, the state, quote, the fifth edition of the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Illness Disorders, America's Psychiatric Manual of Mental Illness Diagnosis, was published last year. It's supposed to revolutionize diagnosis and treatment of mental illness. If you and I submit passively to it, it probably will. Also last year, Dr. Alan Francis published a book critiquing the DMS-5, Saving Normal, an insider's revolt against out-of-control psychiatric diagnosis, the DSM-5, Big Pharma, and the medicalization of everyday life. Now, who's Dr. Francis? Should we ignore him? No, because he led the team that wrote the DSM-5's predecessor, the DSM-4, more than a decade earlier. Why should you care about this? Because no matter who you are or how normal you think you are, the DSM-5 could probably diagnose you with a mental illness. Dr. Francis' concern about, quote, the medicalization of everyday life is that it diverts precious resources away from those who truly need them to those who don't and can rob the latter of their resilience and independence. The DSM-5 could redefine our cultural identity because more and more of us will be defined by its terms, meaning we will be considered mentally incompetent. And the courts will back that, and hence you will no longer have the power to assert yourself. You'll be considered crazy. It's serious. He says that this whole report, by the way, none of which is based upon science, not a scintilla of science in it, just opinion. They vote for a symptom. This baby cried and this baby laughed. Oh, my God. That's bipolar. Show of hands. Hands up. Treat them by 6 months of age. Hands up. Done. That's what they do. And you weren't told about it. Now look how easy it would be to take dissidents, activists, independent thinkers, and show that your anti-defiance disorder is not normal. For your best interest, you should be medicated or you should be hospitalized. You see, there's consequences to this. Let's now go to our guest who's been standing by. Thank you very much for standing by and your patience, from Oakland, California. His name is spelled A-N-U-R-A-D-H-A-M-I-T-T-A-L. I believe it's pronounced Anuradha Mittal.
It's Anuradha Mittal.
Anuradha Mittal. And mm-hmm. She's the founder and executive director of the Oakland Institute, which is a think tank promoting policies and social justice and the environment. And she's an expert in trade, development, human rights, and agricultural issues. And she received several awards, including the Most Valuable Thinker of 2008 by The Nation magazine. And Anu has authored and edited numerous books, including The Great Land Grab, Voices from Africa, African Farmers and Environmentalists Speak Out Against the New Green Revolution. And she's addressed Congress and the United Nations. And she also sits on the board of the Right Livelihood Award, also known as the Alternative Nobel Prize. So I welcome you to the program.
Thanks very much for having me.
Just this week, a major report was published in the peer-reviewed Environmental Research Letters by the prestigious organization, the Institute for Physics in London, about the future of the global food supply. Now, the study concluded, quote, crops grown on land-grabbed areas in developing countries have the potential to feed an extra 100 million people worldwide, in, quote, and upwards 300 people, under 300 million. The entire basis supports the current practice of foreign governments and private businesses and investors being engaged in large-scale acquisitions of land. And there are very serious flaws in this study. The most notable is that it's taken out of the context of the economics in place behind land grabbing, such as the role of the commodity trading in food and the role of investors and hedge funds in artificially manipulating food costs. Since you have had a chance to review this study, and none of the major media questioned it at all, none of them, I read them all, they all reported on it exactly as they were given it, why don't you go through now and show us why land grabbing by multinational corporations and hedge funds and banks do not feed the future of the world's population. They're really about making profits, and a lot of people become hungrier because of it. The forum is yours.
Sure. Thanks very much for having me, first of all. I mean, I would start by saying that if the consequences of what the study suggests were not as disastrous for indigenous people, the pastoralists, the communities whose lands, whose resources are being taken away, if they were not as disastrous as we know they are, I would call this study, you know, ridiculous, that it provides a good fodder for laughter. But unfortunately, its message is so devastating that I have to refrain from calling the people behind it and the study itself absolutely ridiculous. First of all, you know, I think we have to recognize that the study, as it is mentioned, that to reach their results, they used a unique data set of land deals. Now, anyone who has looked at the issue of land deals, you know, this whole trend that has come to be known as land grabs, where foreign governments to private equity, hedge funds, private investors are taking over huge swaths of land in developing countries, in Asia, in Africa, in the Pacific, we know that given the lack of transparency, there is not a complete set of data available. You cannot go to the capitals of countries and get a clear listing of what lands have been given away. Most times people find out that the lands have been given away when they wake up to find their homes, their fields being ripped apart as foreign so-called investors have moved in. So the biggest problem with the study is that it is not based on real data. It is not based on facts. It is not based on evidence. It is based on a bunch of whoever these people are with whatever academic qualifications making huge assumptions and putting out a statement which is ridiculous and has been taken over by media, you know, sometimes doing the most scandalous thing and just saying something which is different from whatever whoever says. It gets into the media. And that's what this is. And I say this with authority because at the Oakland Institute, we have looked at hundreds and hundreds of land deals all over Africa, in Papua New Guinea, in Argentina. And we can speak with authority because we are backed by facts, we are backed by contracts that we have disclosed and the business plans of these so-called investors, that this is devastating food security. Most of the land deals that we have looked at are merely growing food for export. The study does not question whatever amount of food is produced, who will be fed on that? What are the consequences for the local people who lose their lands, who lose their livelihoods, who lose the grazing lands for their cattle? As in the case of Sudan or in the case of Ethiopia, when we talk about the pastoralists, for instance. Secondly, the study does not look at the fact that a lot of these so-called land deals are being used to grow palm oil, to set up palm oil plantations, as in the case of Indonesia or in the case of Papua New Guinea or all over West Africa. Same thing is happening for agrofuels. So these foods or these plantations are not feeding people, as the study seems to claim. Obviously, we don't blame them because they didn't have time, perhaps, to visit the areas they're talking about or meet with the communities they are speaking about. So overall, I would say this study is as shoddy as one expected it to be. It says a lot about the corporate media, which is very glad to put out the message and ignore the fact that the Institute or other organizations such as Grain or studies done by Friends of the Earth clearly demonstrate what the truth is. We have managed to reframe the debate. So you have people with very doubtful academic qualifications with no field research putting out a report which can have huge consequences for humanity.
I appreciate those insights. Thank you. Among the leading nations most engaged in land grabs are the United States, United Kingdom, United Arab Emirates, China, Egypt, India, and Israel. Can you share the agenda the United States has been following in acquiring its share of land grabs, and then the land grabbed by the U.S.? What is it primarily going to be used for? And is this not really a new form of colonialism, of a dominant nations usurping the independence and integrity of another to enslave it economically?
You know, Gary, I'm really glad that you asked this question because, first of all, again, most of the media just tends to believe it's only the Gulf states or it's just China, which is taking over resources in poor countries to feed the burgeoning populations. Our research has shown that there's a land rush which is being driven by the belief that the food prices can be speculated upon, that you just mentioned, or given the financial crisis, they're looking for the next soft commodity to invest in. So the people who are headed there are, you know, U.S. university endowments, for instance. You have pension funds. You have the Dutch-German pension funds. You have the Norwegian churches. So everyone is involved in this land rush. And again, one of the big myths is that they would be putting in infrastructure, they would be growing foods. For a lot of the investors that we have looked at, the goal, the intent was very simple, and that was making profits. And the way they make profits is, on one hand, they can rent it out, but a lot of times we saw land just lying idle. As one of the CEOs, Susan Payne, a Canadian, you know, I mean, it's kind of hard to say it's a UK company because they're registered in tax havens like Mauritius or wherever, clearly said we can be moronic and not grow food and we will make money. That is what she was telling to investors, hoping endowments and pension funds would invest in their private equity fund. Now, guess how these morons plan to make money? They plan to make money through speculation, that they hold on to land, that they get 99-year lease, very often from anywhere from 40 cents a hectare to the max prices that we've seen is $7 per hectare. We're talking about land for which you would be paying $28,000 per hectare in UK, or in the US you would be paying anywhere from $16,000 to $18,000 per hectare. But you can get it for 44 cents or $1 for 99 years, and they hope to flip it around and sell it to the next bidder. In the process, the sovereignty of nations, the sovereign will of communities, their livelihoods, their food security, everything is destroyed. All in the name of this whole development paradigm, which is supported by institutions that we have to ask, such as University of Virginia or this Institute of Physics, what is their ideological agenda? Who is funding these studies? And what is their political goal behind it?
Well, let me then pose our last question. After we read the press release from our office, we contacted the Institute directly. And the question we posed was whether there were any funders behind the author, D. Odorico at the University of Virginia. The Institute promptly replied no. But when we challenged them to debate the lack of economics factored into the analysis, they did not reply back. Turns out that about a year and a half ago, a similar report with the very same conclusions was published by the same professor while he was at Arizona State University. And turns out Monsanto is a huge investor in Arizona State University. They've been funding the university's Biodesign Institute, and its chief scientist, George Post, sits on Monsanto's board of directors. In your investigations, what evidence have you found that Big Ag, corporations like Monsanto or DuPont and others are also steeped in the land and water grab efforts?
Well, in all of these cases, when they promote that large-scale plantations using heavy technology, so-called GM seeds to, your John Deere's tractors and the stuff, there is big industry behind it. Let me give you a concrete example. In 2011, we had exposed the largest land deal in Tanzania, whereby over 800,000 acres of land would have been taken away by an Iowa-based investor, a gentleman by the name of Bruce Rastetter, who used to own the third largest ethanol plant in the United States. This person claimed to the world that, nobody was living on the land, forgot to mention that just in one of the portions of land, over 160,000 people were living and farming those lands. The whole idea was sold to the Tanzanian government, not the Tanzanian people, because they did not even know that the largest land deal had taken place and these people would be displaced to accommodate this Iowa investor, that he had the support of Monsanto and Syngenta and USAID and the Gates Foundation, because big is beautiful. And we are seeing that trend everywhere, because the big ideological push is that we need mechanized industrial agriculture to feed the world. Now, how irresponsible is that, given when we look at what's happening with the climate crisis? Just think of that. Here we know that industrial agriculture contributes so much to climate change. This is something which is impacting the poorest in the poorest countries. And instead of dealing with that, we are saying we want more of that. Never mind what we have done in Western nations. We want to take virgin forest, virgin lands in third world countries, grow GM crops, put in as much pesticides and Roundup that we can pour into the soil, destroy the soils, just so we can make quick short profits.
I appreciate your insights and all your tremendous work. Anu, thank you very much for being with us. We're going to set aside an entire Progressive Commentary Hour to go into this in a greater depth in the very near future, and we look forward to having you back at that time.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Anuradha Mittal, talking about land grabs and the truth behind them. The website is oaklandinstitute.org. I'm Gary Null. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening.